Hello and welcome to the Technically Legal Podcast. This is episode 96 for Tuesday, April 12th, 2011. I'm David O'Brien.
I'm Dominic Rabia.
And this will be a light week for us. Ben's traveling this weekend. And so we have two stories for you. First, Zadiva, a new online movie service, has been sued. And second, Google sues France for being, well, France. So let's get started. This week, Zadiva was sued by Warner Brothers, Columbia Entertainment, Disney, Paramount, and Universal for copyright infringement. Zadiva is a new company that was launched in mid-March. It offers a movie rental service that rents out new release movies by streaming them online to users. Zadiva charges $1.99 for one movie and $10 for a bundle of 10 movies. Interestingly, this sounds pretty similar to the pricing scheme that Redbox used not so long ago. But the difference is, of course, that you're streaming it online. Here's the catch. The movie studios have not licensed any digital copies to Zadiva. What appears to be happening, according to their website and their FAQ section, is that Zadiva is either ripping copies of the DVDs or actually using individual DVD players to play them and stream them on demand when a user comes onto the site and pays for a movie rental. And what they're doing in order to facilitate this, or so they say, is that they're physically renting out a copy of a DVD and a DVD player for each rental that a user selects. So effectively this means for each streaming copy of a movie, there's one DVD of the movie and one DVD player. The reason for all of this equipment and all the optical media is that if they rip the movie in a digital copy and put it onto a hard drive, Zadiva is implicating the anti-circumvention provisions as well as the copyright owners, and in this case that's the movie studios, exclusive rights to copy and distribute their works, and it might potentially implicate the public performance rights as well. However, it's not clear that simply streaming by playing a work through a DVD player isn't implicating other rights under the Copyright Act. And when they announced their service in mid-March, immediately there were a bunch of legal scholars who had some concerns considering copyright infringement. So going into the complaint now, the studios point out that Zadiva is offering these rentals for prices that are far less than are available on other quote-unquote legitimate services like iTunes, Netflix, Amazon, and others. And they claim that it is essentially copyright infringement, but keep in mind, it from what it sounds like on their website, there's no copies that are actually being made unless you count the transmission to be a copy itself. So if there isn't a copy being made, there might not be rights implicated in terms of anti-circumvention, and if the movies are being streamed through DVD players, it's possible that could be a public performance. There have been a couple of decisions in the courts relating to MP3s and other downloads that say it takes more than one person to rent a movie for it to be an actual public performance. So Dominic, what do you think about the suit, and do you think that there's a good argument here that this is a fair use?
Probably not, just because they're basically trying to be really elegant by getting around the... The problem is they're still making a copy of the DVD in some sense by transmitting it to the user. And that implicates copyright. And once you have copyright in the bundle, then they are going to have issues if they don't have a license. Because they're not mailing the DVD to the customer. Instead, they're playing the DVD for the customer and then showing the customer what plays, which technically makes a copy.
You basically have two copies because you have the copy that's on the optical disc at the headquarters, wherever Zadiva is located, and then you have the copy that's being displayed wherever the user is, and that's a good distance away. So you have basically two copies at the same point in time.
I mean, the analogous thing, the closest thing, the case that comes to mind is the Cablevision case that we saw a couple years ago. Basically what Cablevision did there is they would sort of have a TiVo-like service where they would have a copy of the recorded program on the cable on Cablevision's companies itself, and then they would stream the or send the recordings to the customer on demand. And the Second Circuit Court of Appeals said that it wasn't a copyright infringement because it was basically it was a buffer copy. They were just sending a tiny bit at a time, I guess would be the easiest way to describe it. mean, that would seem to be the analogous case here. That would be, and applying that, you could say that here Zadeva is sort of similar because the DVD, they have the DVD physically there, and then they're just streaming it buffer by buffer, bit by bit. It's as if the user was watching it themselves. It's just that basically they're acting as an agent of the user. If you put a DVD in your laptop and watch the DVD, then the laptop is going to be making a copy of the DVD's contents to show them on the stream as it decrypts it, show it on the screen as it decrypts it, and plays it for you. And you're not violating copyright because you're playing a DVD. The Zadeva theoretically is doing the same thing, except for instead of your laptop, they're using their DVD player, which might be 1,000 miles away from you, and they're streaming it over the internet directly to you and no one else, and they're making sure that they're doing one user per one DVD to keep this sort of analogy working. And it's certainly an ingenious idea. I wish it the best of success. I mean, it's kind of sign of how messed up copyright law is that you have to, in order to do a service like this, you have to buy the physical DVDs, keep track of them, and then stream them appropriately to the users. But it is what it is. I mean, I wish them success, but I don't think they will succeed.
Right, it's pretty clear that the way that they have modeled this business is to take advantage of a fair use defense at some point in time. It's the thing that bothers me though is that they've set it up like this purposefully to get around the licensing fees that they would need to negotiate with each of the movie studios. And on top of that, it's not really like renting a movie by going down to your local Blockbuster. I mean, that's clearly the analogy that they're going for is that, hey, look, we have set aside a physical DVD player and a physical copy of the DVD, so therefore it would be just the same as walking into the store and then renting it out and then bringing it home and watching it, except that we're taking out that middle part. Well, that middle part is actually a factor in this, and it having physical copies have their own limitations. When you store work within a particular medium, it has its own container, and the container wears out over time. And those are the types of things that get factored into when the movie studios are selling physical copies to places like Blockbuster, is that they know that over time that a DVD won't last forever. If you give it a long enough time, the medium will actually just disintegrate. And even then, you have all the scratching that goes on as you rent things out. So there's sort of an expectation that those copies won't last forever, and that those places like Blockbuster will have to go back and purchase new ones.
Yeah, Professor James Grimmelman over at, I want to say New York. Let me just make sure I've got the New York Law. He basically has a great blog post that dissects the analysis of what Zadeva is doing. He cites the Columbia Pictures Industry versus Redhorn case, which was a while back. What happened there was there was a rental store basically, and they would rent you a videotape, and they would also rent you a room, a little 4-foot by 6-foot room where you could watch it. Even you could buy some popcorn and sit in the sort of private viewing room right on the rental store, right in the video store itself. And one of their employees would come in and put the tape in the VCR in your booth, and you'd sit back, relax, and watch it in the comfort of your own booth. And the court found that that was copyright infringement because that would be a public performance. And I think the same sort of analogy holds here in that the DVD that Zadeva is playing, anyone can sign up for Zadeva and play the DVD. Anyone can do that. That's technically, they're publicly performing the DVD to anyone because any member of the public can come. It's not restricted in any sense. To distinguish Cablevision, Cablevision was restricted to a slightly different model in that Cablevision was recording shows that it already had the license to broadcast. Zadeva doesn't have the license to broadcast here.
And they have blatantly pointed that out, I think, in several blog posts and on their site, that the reason they can offer these services so cheap is the fact that they don't have to negotiate with the movie studios.
Yeah, and
And
obviously
that,
the movie studios are going to take issue with that.
yeah, of course. And that factors into a fair use defense as well, because one of the things that a judge would consider is what's the effect on the market. And I would argue that this probably would have a profound effect on the market if people could sort of get around those licensing negotiations, because if you look at all the other legitimate services, they have to pay more and they're, you know, going about it in a legal manner. On the other hand, Zadiva here is kind of getting around that and sort of undercutting all the competition by offering it really cheap.
Yeah, and Netflix, for example, even has to wait for the DVD to be out for a couple months before it can even stream the movie, because the studios don't want Netflix availability to cannibalize DVD sales. Zadiva, if you go to their site right now, they're streaming some stuff that just came out on DVD and that isn't available on Netflix. So why should I buy the DVD if I can just watch it on Zadiva for far less? And generally, I'm not going to watch a movie 5 or 6 times, so it's much more valuable to me just rent it 3 or 4 times if I really like a movie, and it's still cheaper than the DVD.
Yeah, I think that this practice is just has questionable written all over it. It'll be interesting to see, though, what ends up happening with the court. There was one other defense that was pointed out on one of the blog posts, probably on Ars Technica or maybe on James Grimmelman's site, is that Zadiva would also probably try to use the first sale doctrine in addition to the fair use doctrine to defend themselves. And the first sale doctrine basically says that once you are the owner or in possession of a copy that you lawfully obtained of a copyrighted work, then under the Copyright Act, there's a special provision which says that you can dispose of it however you see fit. That's the same provision that allows you to go to the store, down to Blockbuster, for instance, and purchase used DVDs that they're trying to get rid of, or go to a used bookstore and purchase a book from the bookstore, and in neither of those instances do you have to pay royalties back to the original copyright owner. So I don't know how the court will deal with that. Obviously, I think that this will hinge on the public performance portion of it, just on the basis of the exclusive rights. So if that, maybe that doesn't even factor into the opinion at all, but, you know, it has this weird sort of interplay with the first sale doctrine, and that's a doctrine that we have sort of seen slowly chiseled away at over time in terms of software licensing and licensing for music online. You know, if you have a digital copy, you effectively have a license for personal use. It's not quite the same thing as owning a CD and you being allowed to do whatever you want with it and put it on several different music players, for instance, at once. We'll see how that all plays out, but my personal prediction for this is that this will not last. I think that they will probably end up being sued into oblivion.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
All set here. Our next story concerns the French being French, as David said in the introduction. Basically what happened there is the government in France published a decree saying that e-commerce sites, as well as video and music sites and online email service, have to keep data on their users, specifically their full names, postal address, any pseudonyms they use, phone numbers, email addresses, data used, and, interestingly, passwords. And they have to keep this for a year, and the police can demand at any time, and or the fraud office, customs, tax, or social security authorities, and e-commerce websites and these other assorted sites have to give this data right away. Google, Facebook, and other internet companies are crying foul just because this is pretty much absurd in that this is, it's unprecedented in terms of a government demanding that companies hand over data like this.
Well, it is definitely unprecedented in some respects. In the U.S., we can draw a lot of corollaries to how the laws work in the U.S. In the U.S., we have the Stored Communications Act and the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, both of which sort of operate in conjunction to protect oral communications that are in transit and certain types of communications when they're in stored mediums. There are a few other laws that affect very specific types of information, financial information. There are lots of new state laws that have popped up in the last 5 years that deal with companies that store any kind of personally identifiable data. And some states, including Massachusetts, have requirements that if you have personally identifiable data, so for instance, names, email addresses, addresses like home addresses, postal addresses, phone numbers, that if you have those things and you're storing them in a medium, that you have to keep it encrypted. And what is interesting about what France is proposing here is that you can just hand over this information if we request it. Presumably there's something similar to the warrant process like we have in the US, but in order just to hand it over, you would have to be able to decrypt it. And I think that, as you pointed out to me earlier before we started the show, that whole process of encrypting and decrypting is usually a bit more fractured than it would have to be at least if this directive ends up going through.
Yeah. Interestingly, passwords have to be provided to the authorities, which actually provides a bit of a technical challenge because most sites right now don't actually store passwords. They store hashes of passwords. A hash is basically, you can apply a function to a password and get a unique non-reversible. Basically, it's a one-way function. You apply this function and then you get this other result, the hash, which then the way this authentication works is if you're running a website, you don't actually want to store users' passwords. So you'll store hashes and apply the hash function to the user's passwords when you initially obtain it from the user when they register, and later when they actually authenticate with the site, when they come back, you just run what they're telling you their password is through the hash, and if it matches what you've stored the hash to be, then you know the password matches without knowing the password, so to speak, because you don't look at what the user gave you applying the hash. And this law would require passwords to somehow be stored to be given to the law enforcement authorities, which to me is really troubling because unfortunately a lot of people use the same password on multiple services as opposed to having an individual password for every service, which is the proper security thing to do. And once law enforcement has one password, they have all your passwords if your password is the same everywhere. You see this when websites get hacked. I think what website was that? Like Gawker got hacked a while ago or something like that?
Yeah, it was the company that manages their, commenting system, I think.
Yeah, and people had their Gmail accounts cracked because they used the same password for that website as they did for Gmail, and scammers were able to send out spam emails from theoretically authentic Gmail addresses because people would suddenly find their accounts used for spam. So that's really troubling to me. I just don't think the French government should be mandating that.
Privacy is just treated differently in the EU. Also, privacy there is a very highly developed area of law, and they have very specific laws that govern how you can store and collect this type of data from individuals. Sometime recently, like the last decade or so, there was a data protection directive which came down from the European Commission, and it has very specific laws about how you are supposed to collect data from individuals in the EU member states if you're a US company, and how you can port that data over to the US. So just knowing all of that, knowing how they like to keep close tabs on data in the EU, it would seem that this might not really fit with some of those principles. So that really surprises me. And I think, as you correctly mentioned too, we're in like this new era of data breaches, which have become quite commonplace. I mean, the last couple of months, I can't tell you how many notifications I've gotten either by email or just seen in article headlines that there's been another data breach that compromised users' email addresses or some combination of, username, email address, postal address, and so on. And it just would seem that if you're forced to keep these things in a manner that is easily accessible, especially with regard to the passwords, as you pointed out, that it would give rise to all these new issues regarding data security, especially over if you had your servers in France.
Yeah. So what happens if the French government says, no, we're going to order you to do this? And first, it's not clear, actually, whether this will apply to global companies like Google or whether it's just to local French companies. That's still up in the air from what I've read. But if it does apply to Google, I'm curious what Google will actually do. I guess I'm inviting you to speculate.
One thing that they might do, this happens a lot apparently in cross-border data flows, is that rather than having your servers hosted in a particular country, you have it hosted in a neighboring country which doesn't have the same rules. So then any data that you're collecting from citizens within that country might, might not be subject to the same local laws as in the country next to it. So, for instance, if you stored it in Germany rather than in France, that might save Google the hassle of having to do this. But it would ultimately depend on the scope of the law and if it's just local or if this is some it was part of a larger EU directive. Obviously, all of that would affect Google's ability to do that. And of course, there are technical considerations of why that might not be such a great idea, because you would degrade performance or whatever, of course, all depending on the type of data at issue. Aside from that, I guess the other thing they could do is riot, right? That's the French way to fix your problems.
Yes.
Take to the street.
That could work.
Kidding, of course.
Yeah.
Have you read any speculation on what Google is planning to do beyond challenging this?
No. I think they're just going to the French Association of Internet Community Services. They're using the French Association of Internet Community Services and appealing to the State Council to keep the data out of the hands of the government, basically.
And I wonder what the effect is then also on some of those neighboring countries who might do business with France or in France, and how exactly do they feel about this? Those are all, I think, important questions. I wonder if France has had some sort of, you know, particular problem of getting this type of data through its law enforcement when they go and request it from companies. I wonder what's the impetus for this directive?
I'm not sure.
Well, there are some things in the U.S. where there are requirements. There are some laws in the U.S. where there are some requirements to keep data for set specified periods of time. And I was thinking about some of these before the show. There's, of course, it's been a long time since I worked with a lot of these. There was Sarbanes-Oxley and the SEC. Certain SEC requirements basically require public companies to keep email archives for a set number of years, and that's, of course, some of those laws come in the wake of the Enron scandals from the 1999-2000 era, where, you know, tons of shredded documents were basically, there was information basically unavailable for purposes of the SEC investigation and all the litigation that went on. So I think it's widely become recognized, at least for public companies, that documentation of corporate wrongdoing or even possibly exculpatory emails could play a strong role in a lawsuit or some sort of regulatory investigation.
Yeah.
Most of the other laws, though, that I'm aware of that implicate how you store and handle data really involve the private aspects of it, or concerns about privacy, and they don't have specifications, as far as I'm aware, that you need to store passwords in clear text, or something like clear text, or some sort of encryption would have to be much less strong than it would be otherwise if it wasn't stored in a hash or something like that.
I mean, you can still store the password encrypted. It's just that, I don't know, it just makes me uncomfortable that they can, mostly because a vast majority of people are just completely insecure with their passwords and have the same password everywhere, and usually it's pretty easy to guess, and it's just bad when you have one password that unlocks everything, considering how more and more of our commerce and life is becoming facilitated via electronic means. So,
right, and the other thing is, in the U.S. we have these very particular standards of how you obtain a warrant, but they're not exactly insurmountable. I mean, we have the Patriot Act here, which unfortunately grants a lot of access to electronic storage mediums, and it's sort of been a pain in a lot of people's neck, especially the EFF, for the last several years. But for the most part, you still have to show that what you're looking for, if you're asking for this type of information from a company, is relevant to an ongoing criminal investigation. And that's at least something, and I would hope that France has similar, you know, mechanisms in place to sort of guard for the frivolous asking of information from these companies.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on this story?
No, I think that's about it. Unfortunately, this is one of those things where we're out of our area of expertise, but it's definitely fascinating because of the requirements that France is imposing on U.S. tech companies. So we'll have to keep our eyes on it.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep our listeners posted on what occurs, if anything. Although, generally, with government action, things move very slowly.
Especially in France.
That's true. With that, thank you for listening to Technically Legal. I'm Dominic Rabier.
I'm David O'Brien.
You can subscribe to our podcast at www.technicallylegal.org. Visit us on Twitter at @techlegal. And if you have comments, questions, thoughts, or ideas, or suggestions, feel free to email us at podcast@technicallylegal.org.